Golf Smarter number 93 for September 24, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Using the mental keys to improve your golf with Michael Anthony.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and a shout-out goes to Mike Knopfs and Brent Bertram, who play at the Binder Park Golf Course in Battle Creek, Michigan. Thanks, guys, for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast on a regular basis, and thank you for joining us today, where Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf will make recommendations to a couple listeners about purchasing new clubs and will announce the winner of the drawing for a Nike Sumo Fairway Wood. Our guest today is Michael Anthony, who has a book called The Mental Keys to Improve Your Golf and an audio CD called Using the Mental Keys to Polish the Wheel. Michael comes to us, as do many of the topics discussed on Golf Smarter, by a request from a listener. So please keep your requests and suggestions for more content coming. I really appreciate it. You can always do it by clicking the Hey Fred button at GolfSmarterPodcast.com. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Fred. How are you doing this wonderful morning?
Oh, it is a beautiful morning, isn't it?
We're both in the Bay Area, so we've got this great weather to enjoy.
To me, there are three parts of golf. There is the physical side, the mental side, and the emotional side. You agree with that?
Well, you said the physical, mental, and the emotional. The mental and emotional are pretty much the same. So I guess you mean mechanical.
Okay, well, and I would think that the physical and mechanical are...
I basically have four parts of golf.
Okay.
You've got the mechanical, you've got the mental, you've got the physical conditioning, and you have the strategy. All four of them work together.
Okay, prioritize them, please.
If you can't hit a golf ball, if you never put a club in your hand, I would imagine that the mechanical would be very, very important. But once you've hit dozens and dozens of golf balls and you got the mechanics down, that's when mental becomes the most important thing. Because when you look on tour, you'll have a player win one day, and the next day, next week he doesn't even make the cut. And it's not his mechanics changing dramatically. It's his mental state that has the biggest impact on whether he maintains his cool and makes the cut or just, drops out.
Okay. And then part three would be?
Well, part three, the physical conditioning. A lot of golfers are not in great shape, but at least they weren't that way until Tiger came on the scene. And he's, raised the standards tremendously, and he's doing everything he can to be the best he can. He's forcing his competitors, just for sheer survival's sake, to get into physical conditioning. So that's becoming important. But even still, it comes down to the mechanics and the mental part. Because you can look at John Daly as a great example of not being in physical shape, but he still has a great game, when he has his head together.
Well, there you go. When he has his head together. So, he's got the physical. He doesn't have the conditioning. He's got the mechanical part.
He's got the mechanical, and he doesn't have his head together.
Right.
I would love to sit down and work with him.
Really?
Yeah, because I could.
What would you do?
I would just go from A through Z of how his brain processes information. And if you do it clear enough, it makes enough sense, it'll give him an opportunity to at least stop shooting himself into the foot. He's been through a lot of AA programs, which are very, very good programs. But it's a big difference between knowing what to do and the ability to be able to do it. Like a lot of people say, do as I say, not as I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to say what to do than to do it. That's why the Mental Keys, my mental training program, is so unique. Because I just don't give people tons and tons of techniques, do this, do this, do this, do this. I explain why these techniques work. Most golfers, and matter of fact, most people in the population, don't have a clue how much their emotions affect their game. And the reason why they affect their game is, to put it very simply, when you have a positive thought, emotion, your brain will secrete a positive chemical. When you have a negative thought or emotion, your brain will secrete a negative chemical. The resulting chemical composition of the brain's cranial fluid determines how well you're able to perform, think, everything about you. So you're literally controlling your body's ability to perform by controlling your mental state. And most golfers aren't even aware of that. And if you're not aware of it, how can you do anything about it?
And you're absolutely convinced that it's controllable.
Oh, it's totally controllable. I forget the name of these companies out there, but they're selling devices that you monitor your heart to control your emotions. I think it was the guy that won the Masters. What is that? My memory's a little sieve right now. But he said he went to the school and they taught him how to control his heart rate, which allowed him to handle emotional situations of the pressure when he's playing in a tournament. And so it's totally controllable.
Yeah, we interviewed Dr. Bruce Wilson, I think it was, about the heart aspect of controlling the beat and the pacing, and he felt that had a tremendous impact and influence on being able to maintain an even keel and not get overexcited and upset.
What I deal with is, you know, there's six things that affect the chemistry of the brain. They're your thoughts, your diet, your rest, environment, and your physiology. And your physiology is your breathing. You can totally change your game by becoming aware and slowing down and taking deep breaths and exhaling. This will bring you so much control over your emotions, it's unbelievable. You ever heard the saying, when you get angry, count to 10?
Yeah, of course.
Sure, because when you're counting to 10, if you count slowly and exhale after each one, you eliminate the anger. You start gaining control over the emotions so you have a clear head.
Well, somebody like myself who gets distracted easily, I usually don't make it to 10 if I have to go that slowly.
Okay, but at least you get started.
Yeah, or I fall asleep.
Yeah. And so what I'm so excited about my program is that I give a one-year money-back guarantee. And people say, wow, that's a pretty strong guarantee. And the only reason I can afford to do this is because the program works if you use it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't use it, it doesn't work. But if you use even a small percentage of it, it works. I've had, you know, golfers, you know, get my book and my CD. They write back, Michael, I've been playing golf my entire life, and I finally broke 100.
Yay.
That's a big milestone for people.
Yes, it is.
Get another letter back 5 weeks later. Mike, I had a bad day at golf, and I broke 90 for the first time, and I wasn't even hitting the ball well. It's your mental keys work. I couldn't even break 100 5 weeks ago. How many golfers that can't even break 100 would love to be able to shoot in the 90s in a month or two just by controlling their emotions?
Tell me your history a little bit. Explain to me how you got to teaching golf this way, and if that's always been your focus is golf, and you learned the mental part, or you started at the mental side and realized that there was so much value in golf.
Not really. I have a very interesting background. My neighborhood was a blue-collar neighborhood in Baltimore. My father was a longshoreman, so either when you got out of high school, you went down the docks and threw bags as a stevedore, or you went to Procter & Gamble at a Domino's Sugar House. I was one of the few kids in my neighborhood that had enough of sense to, let's go to college. So I worked for 2 years, had enough for my first year of college, started college at the University of Maryland, and people said, well, Michael, what about the next 3 years? I said, forget about that. Let's make it through the first year. I made it through the first year, and then I ended up graduating from the University of Maryland. Then I went to NYU, New York University, their MBA program during the evening. I got a job on Wall Street in international banking. And after about 3 years, I started looking around and said, you know what? The outside world sucks. It's not making me happy. Excuse my language.
Oh, no, that's okay. It's a podcast. Nobody cares.
So I went into a spiritual search. I wanted to find out what would make me happy again, because I knew the outside world with riches and money and glory, you know, that holds you for a little bit of time, but not inside. So why I became dissatisfied with the outside world, because I was on a fast track to become very, very successful in the business world. You know, an MBA back in the 60s, people didn't know what an MBA was. And so I dropped out of the world, and I just read tons and tons of books on Zen, Buddhism, Western philosophies, left New York City, came out to San Francisco, you know, took a lot of different odd kind of jobs, and met a mentor who taught me about the chemistry of the brain.
Anyway, I'm going to interrupt you. When is it that you came to San Francisco?
I think it was about 75.
Same year I arrived, yeah.
And I met, you know, this guy, Edgar Phillips, in the late 70s, and I ran across some good information. I said, gee, this makes a lot of sense. So I tried to take it to the business world back in 82, 83. And the business world loved the idea of increasing performance, but there was only one caveat, and it requires total honesty. Because if you can't become honest with you who you are, you'll never be able to sort through the emotions. But business would rather make money than be totally honest. So I jumped in. I had, where else can I go? I ran into sports. So I started working with all the college teams, you know, in the Bay Area, San Francisco State, Stanford, Berkeley, wide variety of sports. And it was in 84. I went down to the Olympics in L.A., and I ran into Ruby Fox, who was a pistol shooter, and she was, had a hard time making, she wasn't even going to make the Olympic team. It was just a chance meeting an hour before her last heat. I said, how you doing, Ruby? She said, not too good. I'll probably miss the team. I said, you got any more chances? I'm talking fast because I want to get a lot of information in there. She says, yeah, I've one more chance. And I said, what, in about an hour? I said, you want an Evan Wood speed reading course on mental training? She said, sure. Took her around the shed. I, you know, told her the nuts and bolts of how fear is really ruining her game. She goes out the final heat. Out of 300 possible points, she shoots a 299 and makes the Olympic team.
Wow.
You know, in 45 minutes, I took her from not even making the team to, you know, almost a perfect score. That's how fast the program works once you become aware and start changing your emotions.
Was she that obvious?
She was supposed to be the American front runner to make the team.
Mm-hmm.
And she had fear and was keeping, was preventing her to perform at her ability. I got rid of her fear, and her mechanics were there already.
Well, I'm really curious about this. Had you known her previously, or was this the first time?
I was working with an amateur golfer, a pistol shooter, who won the national championship. And it was just by chance that she introduced me to Ruby.
And you sized it up in moments, knowing that it was her confidence?
I have so much confidence that what's causing golfers and every athlete and every person on this planet from being their best is their negative emotions. It's either fear or anger or the other negative emotions. I've done this so long, it's so obvious to me. You talk about confidence, you know, my confidence, you know, goes through the roof. I have to hold myself down. You know, it's just amazing. That's why I give a one-year money-back guarantee. I'd give a lifetime guarantee, but one of my friends who's an attorney says, you have to put a limit on it, Mike. I said, okay. And it's amazing. I sold thousands and thousands of books, and I probably got maybe one or maybe a dozen back. And that's amazing.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, because the program works. All you need is a golfer that has desire. Unfortunately, they don't have the desire to work on their mental game. They have a wish. Oh, I wish I had a great mental game. The difference between desire and a wish, a person with desires puts it to action. A person with a wish just dreams about it and doesn't do anything about it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I worked with Rob Mangini, who was the assistant men's coach at ASU when I was down there in the 90s. And he wrote a little piece for me. He says, Michael, what makes me laugh is you see these golfers after spending hundreds of hours on their golf swing and hundreds of dollars on their equipment to walk around with a 10-cent head. So I'm not saying that you have 10-cent heads out there, golfers. Rob Mangini said it. But I think a lot of you who are into the mental game would realize there are a lot of golfers with 10-cent heads out there.
I think he got that line from the movie Bull Durham.
Maybe he did.
Because I remember that he said, that's your problem. You got $1 million arm and a 10-cent head.
I don't know when Bull Durham came out, but it's probably right around that time. Maybe Rob picked it up, you know, from there. And Rob was real good friends with Phil, you know, Phil Mickelson.
Okay.
And I said, Rob, get me together with Phil. And he said, you can't get to Phil. It's like Fort Knox. He's so protected. But he did share all the information. So if you hear Phil talk about, you know, process, 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 and not outcome, he heard it from Rob, who heard it from me.
Mm. So, fabulous. Very interesting. So let's talk about it. I like your package because it's a book and a CD. You have a captive audience here because we are golfers. And we have desire, obviously, or we wouldn't be listening to the show. And believe in this thing about that. I mean, that's what Golf Smart is all about. It's believing that you can succeed, and that if you have the negative thoughts, if you don't have the confidence in yourself, that it's going to impact your score. And you put it right here, guaranteed to lower your score, on the cover of your book.
But let me give your audience a 3 or 4 minute scoop of what this is all about, because it's such a very simple program, yet it's very profound.
Awesome.
Okay. The first thing you have to understand is that your emotions create chemical changes in the brain. Positives are positive, negatives are negatives. Now your thoughts, all your thoughts have two components. There are facts and there are emotions. When you play around in golf, you've experienced the same facts many, many times out there, and you've attached the same emotions to those facts, which means that if you've had fear in the past, when you run across a similar situation, you're going to have that fear again. And the reason why that happens is that your brain starts working at a very early age. 3 months prior, you know, to birth, while you're still in your mother's womb, it'll start recording everything that's going on around you, all of your thoughts and experiences. And when you come out into this world, your brain continues to record everything that's going on, including this conversation right now. Now, conceptually, I call the recording of the brain your tape. Now, the importance of the tape is that when you go to make a decision, your brain very quickly reviews what you've done in the past, what is on your tape, and you're programmed to immediately respond with similar reactions. So if you have fear of playing every time you run across a similar situation, that fear is going to be called right up there instantly. And fear is going to lower your chemistry. You're going to make a bad shot. And guess what? If you get angry after you make a bad shot, guess what happens? You're going to get angry again. And then when you're angry, if you haven't shaken it off, when you're ready to hit the next shot, that anger is going to lower your chemistry, and you're going to hit another bad shot. So it's a round robin down. And if you're not aware of the chemical swings and your tape's, you know, propensity to repeat itself, you know, you're stuck. But once you become aware of this, then you can start understanding why, you know, Joe Parrott and Jim Ragona and Darren Jean talk about, forget about the score, forget about the outcome, focus on the process. When you're concerned about the outcome, you open yourself up to fear of missing and anger of missing. Well, you don't care about the outcome. You're just totally in the present, totally in the process. You eliminate those emotions. That's, you know, that, so your mental state will allow you to optimize the chemistry of your brain to perform at your highest level. So the key is become aware that you're going to repeat what you've done in the past. All of the facts that you've encountered on the golf course, if you have any negativity, fear, whether it's a big fear or a little doubt or anger or irritation, going to lower your chemistry, take away from your ability to perform. So your major goal as far as the mental part of the game is to monitor your thoughts, monitor your emotions, and whenever your emotions start overcoming you, stop, take a couple of deep breaths, slowly exhale, and say, hey, I'm worried about the outcome. Let's get back into the present. Let's get back into the process, which will change the chemistry of the brain, increase your probability of success. And that, in a nutshell, is what it's all about, because the mental game is nothing more than creating a mental state that will optimize the chemistry of the brain, which will allow you to play in the zone or at your highest level. And if a golfer can understand that and work on achieving that, their scores are going to fall. And I have a daily affirmation in my book to, you know, 8 little words that will help you monitor your emotions 24 hours a day, not while you're just playing golf, through your entire life. Now that's, in the essence, you know, Fred, is what it's all about.
Fabulous. And there's so many aspects of that that I want to go after and don't even know where to begin. I don't even know if we finished the four parts in the beginning, mechanical, mental, conditioning.
And strategy.
And strategy. Okay. And you put them in that order.
Yeah. And strategy comes down to, you know, once you got the mental game, you know, once you have the mechanical ability, once you're in halfway decent shape, even if you're not in decent shape like Dale is, you know, you wonder how much important the physical conditioning is. When you get up to Tiger's level, you know, it's really important. But even still,
there is nobody at Tiger's level.
On a consistent basis, on a sporadic basis, there is, because Tiger would never lose if that was true.
Okay.
You know, see, your chemistry is going to vary. I don't know why it varies from day to day, but that's why a golfer go out there one day and shoot in the low 60s, and the next day, you know, shoot in the 70s. It's because, you know, the chemistry changes, and what happens, you know, when they have it that day, you know, they're on a roll. And then when they go to play the next day, knowing that they shot a low score, I forget the statistic, but they say any time a golfer shoots in the low 60s on tour, you can pretty much guarantee that the next day he's going to shoot in the 70s.
Why?
The reason why...
That blows me away.
Because they forget what happened on the good day. The good day, they weren't thinking about the outcome. They were just playing their game. Okay, now that they got in the, you know, shot in the low 60s, they go out and they try to duplicate the score.
Right.
They become score-oriented, outcome-oriented, instead of process-oriented. So as soon as they make the first bad putt, or the putt doesn't go in that went in yesterday, they get irritated. And then it gets worse and worse and worse. That's why they let their emotions take control.
I was robbed.
Yeah, I was robbed. You weren't robbed. You know, you were lucky yesterday, and today you weren't lucky. No big deal.
Oh, so should that be mechanical, mental, conditioning, strategy, luck. Do we need to put that in there too?
Well, you control your luck by controlling the chemistry of the brain. The better mental state you have, the luckier you get. A lot of golfers remark at Tiger. They say, well, Tiger is one of the luckiest golfers in the world. Well, he's one of the luckiest golfers in the world. He's got one of the greatest mental states in the world. And so luck goes your way when you have a good chemistry. It's a very profound system I'm talking about here. It gets into cause and effect, attractive fields, chemical energy, electromagnetic fields, which are the four building blocks of the universe. You know, this program I have is so profound. It's just like if you wanted to go to India and spend 20 years to be under a guru to become enlightened, you know, you can save yourself 20 years. Read my book, listen to my CD, and go play golf. You'll have all the information you need to become an enlightened being. And by the way, your scores will be a lot lower.
All right, well, I've got you here now, and let's see if we can give some real positive and useful tips on how to control. Let's start with controlling fear. I know that you talked about fear in the book. You talk about it on your CD. And I was thinking about it as I was listening to the CD, that there are so many different types of fear through a round of golf, starting from the first tee jitters and all the way through knee knocker putts throughout your round. How can we put that in check? How can we control that?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that question, because fear is the public enemy number one, not only on the golf course, but throughout life and almost every other sport out there. And the fortunate thing about fear, it's the easiest negative emotion to overcome. Now, I'm going to put a 30-second commercial in here. My website is mentalkeys.com, mentalkeys.com, and sign up for my free newsletter, because I wrote a mental tip called Fear Cannot Exist in the Present. And I was doing a lot of radio talk shows, and a lot of the hosts were blown away with that concept that fear cannot exist in the present. Now, anytime anyone has fear, you know, since we're golfers, let's talk about golf. Whatever the situation is, if you notice that you have fear, just step away and take a look and say, fear of what? It's fear of an outcome. You know, because if you weren't concerned about the outcome, fear could not exist. And the outcome, believe it or not, is in the future. It has not occurred. And you cannot live in the future. All you can do is live in the present. So once you become aware that you have fear, you step away from the ball and you talk to yourself. I have fear. Fear of what? I have fear of a future outcome that has never occurred. And I says, can I live in the future? No, I can't live in the future. Where do I live? I live in the present. What time is it? The time is now. So how well you execute will determine the outcome. And this is how you control fear, by getting back into the present, taking a couple breaths and exhaling, which will change your physiology, which will get you back into the present. And you say, okay, I'm here in the present. The only thing I can control is my execution, which Joe Parent talked about, you know, in his Zen putting. He said, that's all you control is the execution. How well you control the execution determines the probability of success and what the outcome will be. Believe it or not, that's all fear is. First tee jitters, you're worrying about the outcome on the first tee. So you just take a look at jitters, you're nervous. Take a couple deep breaths, relax, and say, talk to your tape, first tee jitters, let's get rid of these first tee jitters. And if you do that over and over and over again, after a while, first tee jitters will no longer exist. And if they do, they'll be very minor. You'll just laugh, snap your fingers, and they'll disappear. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. But, you know, we're pretty macho. And I recently played with a sheriff, a county sheriff, and I can't imagine this guy even recognizes fear. And I think that's one of the elements of this that that I have a problem with, is that how do I recognize that it's fear? How do I say, you know, it's like, oh, God, these guys are what? I mean, what is it that's going to let me know, oh, I'm experiencing fear right now?
Okay, Fred, you set me up. First off, the answer, your first question is, a lot of times you get caught up in the moment and you hit the ball without even knowing you have fear. Now, if you take a look at the results, you're going to find out that 9 out of 10 times the ball didn't go where you wanted it to go.
That's golf.
So you can either just shrug that off or you can use my four-step routine. My four-step routine starts off, it's feedback, relax, prepare, instinctive execution.
Well, one more time.
Okay. The four-step routine is I start off with feedback, and then you relax, then you prepare, and then you go instinctive execution. I start with feedback because during a round of golf, that's where most of the emotions come from. You're watching what the heck happened, and then you tend to get upset. Well, you got the feedback. You can see, what did I do wrong mechanically, and what was my mental state before I hit the ball? And then, after the fact, you can say, well, gee, I was nervous. I was concerned about the outcome. So a lot of times you'll discover that you have fear after the fact. Now, that's when you start learning, because the feedback gives you the information where you talk to your tape, I had fear. The next time that comes up, let's check my mental state before we hit the ball. Now that you've made that adjustment, that's the feedback. You've made your adjustment. You told the tape what to do in the future. Then you want to relax, because that shot is history. You can't live in the past, and you can't live in the future.
Yep.
So you want to relax, exhale, get into the present. And then the next stage is preparation. You're walking to the ball. You're looking, what is the distance? What is the lie? What is the weather condition? What is my, you know, club selection? What is my plan of attack? And so you're getting ready to step up, you know, to the ball. My book goes into great detail, and my CD, you know, reinforces how this whole thing works.
And I tell you, the part of the book that really amazed me is the charts and graphs. I mean, you have it down to not just a mental aspect to it, but it's a scientific.
Oh, it's very scientific, because when I used to start this up, before I wrote the book, I spent maybe 20 years, you know, doing one-on-ones with a whole variety of athletes. And 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, I'd sit down, I'd start at the corner, first step is desire. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I finished my two-hour consultation with them, I had a whole chart light up. So when it was time to write my book, I wrote my book. It was very fast because I spent 20 years getting prepared to do it. So it didn't take me any time at all to do it. But to go back to your story about the sheriff, you know, in fear, I was playing a game one day, and I actually was in golf. I was playing shuffleboard and with this one stranger. And after the game, he was a big, gruff guy. You know, I beat him. He was a good opponent, so he was a worthy opponent. But, you know, but I had my game on. I beat the guy, and he said, let me buy you a drink. I said, okay. You know, for those that don't drink alcohol, you know, you can say I bought a Coke, but I'll let your imagination decide, you know, how to drink. So we're sitting there talking. He says, you intimidated me. And I says, why?
Awesome.
He says, well, whenever you played, whether you made a shot or missed a shot, your attitude did not change. You, every time you got up there, you played as if you expected to make every single shot. And I says, well, thank you very much. I train myself to do it that way. I says, by the way, what do you do? He says, well, I coach wrestling, and I'm the lead man for a SWAT team. And I says, well, I'm a mental trainer. What does the lead man for a SWAT team do? He says, I'm the first guy through the door, and I've got to take out the guy on the left before he shoots me.
Wait a minute. He coaches wrestling, lead man for a SWAT team, and you were playing shuffleboard with him?
I'm playing shuffleboard with this guy, and I intimidated this guy. And his job
Pick
is to go through the door
games?
And wipe out, you know, the other guy before he gets shot. And I said, I do mental training. How do you overcome, you know, the fear? He says, it's just like in wrestling. Training, training, training. He says, I train myself to focus totally on the process and never, ever think about the outcome. I said, do you ever have any fear? He says, the only fear I have is that my opponent on the other side won't take out his guy on the right side, but I rely on his training. You know, so that's what
teamwork.
Teamwork. Now, when you're playing golf and you have fear, think about the guy on the SWAT team, the first man through the door.
No.
And I laughed. I said, there you go. That's what I'm trying to tell these golfers.
Yeah.
I said, and I wrote a nice little tip on that training. And but it's a, and but that's what it's all about, training. That's why I have my CD. Because, you know, I had my book. Now, some golfers really are students. They'll read a book over and over and over and over. I had this one amateur golfer, he was in his 50s, and he got my book, and he made it his Bible. He read it over and over and over. He not only was the golfer of the year for the senior, he was also the overall golfer of the year for Kansas State. I can't use his name because he said he almost lost his amateur status when he gave me a nice testimonial, so we had to drop his name. But you know, but he really studied this. But if you look at the publishing statistics, when 10% of the people that buy a, only 10% of the people that buy a book will ever finish reading the book. That means 90% of the people that buy a book never even read the whole book. Now, how can you get good at something if you don't train? How can you go take a golf lesson and not practice to get good? How can you read a book one time and expect to remember that and practice it? Now, since I know that if you sell a book and if it doesn't work, you know, you don't get much word of mouth. If you sell a book and it works, they, your golfers, you get a lot of word of mouth. A lot of my sales are word of mouth. Now, to protect myself, I said, how can I get these guys to start reading the book over and over and over? Because that's what it takes, repetition, repetition, to get really good at something. And I said, well, a lot of people don't have time to read because we live in a very busy world. And I said, okay, let's put together a CD. Now, the CD has two parts. Most golfers, when they go to the golf course, if you don't live in a golf community, it's about a half-hour drive, if not longer, especially in California with traffic and things like that. So I have part one is about a little more than a half hour, and part two is a little more than a half hour. Now, what I do with part one, I review the key components of the mental keys, so that while you're driving to the golf course, you're refreshing your memory, you're putting all of this information back on your tape about the chemistry, about thoughts, facts, and emotions, about your tape, about focusing on the process and not the outcome, about the four-step routine, how to transform your emotion. So you're mentally prepared when you step out of the car to play that round of golf because everything's current, everything's fresh. Okay, they play a round of golf. Now, when they're driving home, they pop in part two. And when it starts off, what happened? If you had a good round of golf, you're probably listening to me. If you had a bad round, you're probably hiding. And I put that in there because if you had a bad round of golf, you go home, kick your dog, you know. You're really miserable. I have one friend of mine that he missed qualifying for the PGA Tour in a third qualifier, missed it by one stroke. I didn't hear from him for 3 months.
Ouch.
He disappeared from the face of the earth. So I know that, you know, how devastating it is when you play a bad round of golf. But that's the most important time to take a look at what happened during that bad round of golf.
Sure.
Was it your mechanics? Was it your mental state? Because remember, when you talk to your brain, your tape's going to repeat what happened that day unless you talk to it and say, because the most current portion of your tape has the biggest impact on your decision-making ability. So I train a person, when you go to bed that night, reflect on what happened and tell your tape in the future. If I had fear, step away from the ball, take a deep breath, exhale, get back into the present, get into the process. And so that way, when you're going to sleep that night, your brain's remembering how you want it to play in the future instead of repeating the fear that it had that day. Or if you got angry, you talk to your tape, tape, next time I get angry, step away from the ball, take a couple deep breaths, exhale, that shot is history, let's get back into the present. And it's training. But if you don't train, you're going to repeat the same thing over and over. And they say golfers very rarely, throughout their history of their life, their handicap pretty much remains the same because they're not spending the time. You got to have the mechanics, but you've got to have the mental thing. And my program works 24 hours a day. My daily affirmation will train a person to watch, monitor their thoughts every single second of the day.
I'll tell you, one of the strongest takeaways that I have from this conversation is the fact that you were able to intimidate a player by only being focused on the process and the fact that, as he said, you just look like you expect to make that shot, and it intimidated them. So by controlling your emotions, by not getting out of control, you scared the guy.
That's right, and it goes deeper. It goes deeper than that, Fred. Your nervous system, when you receive input through your five senses, see, feel, taste, touch, smell, it comes in through a neuron electrically. Breaks down at the very end called a synapse, converts into a biochemical called a neurotransmitter, and it's delivered chemically to the next neuron, goes electrical, chemical, electrical, chemical. So your nervous system is an is an electrical current. All alternating currents create electromagnetic fields, which are infinite in nature. So when you're standing next to somebody, you can literally feel his energy, his chemistry. Like when Tiger Woods steps on this tee on the playoff, he exudes total confidence. His electromagnetic field goes right through his opponent. My electromagnetic field went right through that guy who was a SWAT guy.
Yeah.
That's why the police, you know, when they come in, they're taught total force, total command. Their magnetic fields have to be so strong so they intimidate, you know, make a person weak. You can control a person just by the strength of your magnetic field. When I talk right now, if I'm talking weepy, beepy, you know, people aren't listening. I'm talking strong. They're feeling my electromagnetic field. It's not just what I'm saying. It's the strength of the vibration that I'm communicating with. Powerful program.
Very powerful program. The name of the book is The Mental Keys to Improve Your Golf, guaranteed to lower your score. The CD is Using the Mental Keys to Polish the Wheel. The website, mentalkeys.com, and you even have an ongoing newsletter that you send out, too, on the web, right?
Yes, I do, and it's a free newsletter, and I put it out there because first time around, you say, okay, that's fine. But, you know, a year later, because when I sell my books, I ask a little survey. I said, you know, why did you buy? And they said, well, I bought it because, you know, I got so guilty out of reading all your tips and lowering my score, I just had to reimburse you because you do such a great job on your tips.
Fabulous. Michael Anthony, thanks so much for spending the time with us.
Thank you very much, Fred, for having me on. I'd be happy to appear again if you have a list of questions for me to answer.
It's time to ask Kenny. Do you have a question about specific golf gear or are confused about what to look for in a category of golf products? Kenny Nicholson, our technical specialist at edwinwattsgolf.com, would like to help. And if we use your question on the show, you'll receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. Now, to submit your question, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Hey, Kenny, how are you?
Good, Fred. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. We've got a couple questions. We have a giveaway. We need a new product to give away. I am so excited about getting today started. So the first question comes in from Joe Morris, who writes from Portland, Oregon, and he needs a fairway wood recommendation. He says he's returning to golf after a 10-year hiatus. He played in college where he says he was, frankly, awful. In fact, yeah, I love this line. I would say I am right where I left off despite the 10 years of rust. Golf technology has changed so much in recent years that I'm having trouble navigating the pro shops. I've never been a heavy hitter, and I find I hit the ball better or straighter when I swing more easily. My biggest problem is the fact that I push the ball right, he's right-handed, fairly consistently when he takes a bigger swing. So he picked up some irons and a T7 driver secondhand. Poor show. What sort of fairway woods should he be looking for to help ease back into this wonderful game of golf?
Man, that's a good question. One, he needs to try to swing easily, or I should say more fluid, with his golf swing. When you're using a lot of times, what you tend to do anytime you have a driver, fairway wood, or say a long iron in your hand, what a lot of people try to do is they know this club's supposed to go a lot farther than most of the clubs in their bag. So what they typically do, including myself, is you tend to overswing a little bit because, you know, you want this ball to go a long way. So the hardest part sometimes is to take an 8-iron swing with a driver or 3-wood. You would be amazed at how much more consistent you are. Are you going to lose a little bit of yardage? Sure, you might lose a little bit of yardage, but you're going to gain playability. Would you rather be 10 or 15 yards shorter in the fairway or 10 or 15 yards further down the fairway in the rough or in the woods for that matter? And he brings up a good point. He says when he overswings, he tends to hit the ball a lot further right, him being a right-handed golfer. What happens is your hands come through the impact area a lot sooner than when you take a slower swing. So what that does is the face is coming through the impact area more open as well, so you're creating a spin that's going to obviously slice the ball or hit the ball more to the right. So there are some clubs out there that are available that can help with that. You know, they do make draw fairway woods now, which have been a huge asset to a lot of people. It has a little bit more heel weighting to help close the toe at impact, and it sets up just a little more closed. You know, it's not real drastic at address, but, you know, with adding the heel weight to the golf club, you increase toe speed. So they do help get the club back to square.
Excellent.
I mean, as far as recommendations go, I mean, I would definitely look at the Callaway Big Bertha. I'd look at the Ping. There's a lot of fairway woods out there that are very, very popular for the guy that's looking for extra help.
All right, that was fine. And to continue the thought about which clubs to purchase, this is I just think this is a hilarious letter we get from Martin Baker in Queensland, Australia. He says, I've been an avid listener for many months. I've been considering a new driver. And I got excited about the Titleist D1 when Kenny was raving about it, but decided to invest in lessons. Good job, buddy. And now am ready to make the investment. Then I heard the Kenny Ping review and thought, wow, maybe that's the way I should go. And I even contacted my local pro to book it for me when he gets his hand on the new driver because they haven't arrived in Australia yet. Then Kenny went and visited Nike, and now I hear they have something new coming down the line, which I could really help, especially when I hear Kenny talking about the mishits hitting the fairways. So can I ask you to stop reviewing clubs until the new Nike driver arrives in Australia and he will make his purchase from Edwin Watts Golf?
That's hilarious. Okay. I know he's probably sitting there thinking, this guy gets paid to endorse these products.
Now, wait.
When I definitely do not. The thing about it is, you know, when we talk about the bigger manufacturers out there, and, you know, there's probably five or six big manufacturers that all spend tons and tons of money in research and development, and they're going to bring a product to the table that's going to perform well. So when I go review it, I have to give an honest opinion. And, you know, if it doesn't perform well, I'm not going to sit here and rave about it. The fact of the matter is the drivers that I've reviewed, you know, over the last few months that are coming out or that are out right now are absolutely incredible. You know, we made a joke here not long ago, you know, if you can't find a driver now, you need to give up golf just because there's so many good drivers out there. You know, the best thing to do in any situation is to just go to the golf course and try to demo some products and see which one performs the best for you. Because if there was one driver out there that was that good or that much more superior than other drivers on the market, then obviously that would be the one that gets played everywhere by everyone. And it's just not that way. You know, that's why there's a plethora of drivers out there for everybody to choose from.
Well, he also asked, can you suggest what irons he should be considering from the Nike range? He has a handicap of 20. He tries to get out about 3 mornings each week. And he says, my natural swing is a slight draw, and I'm confident with all my clubs from the 3-iron upward that he currently uses a mid-flex graphite. So what would you suggest as far as irons?
Well, he's wanting to stay, you know, he's saying, what would I suggest from Nike?
Right.
And they do have a new iron coming out. And I still, there's a moratorium on being able to talk about those right now. But I can tell you that he's a 20 handicap player. And compare the new iron that's coming out to the Pro Combo, it's going to offer him tons more forgiveness than what he's playing right now. And as far as playability-wise, a 20 handicapper typically, when I see one playing or am, you know, in a group with one, you know, workability is not the number one thing they want. They want to be able to hit the ball fairly straight and consistent and then work from there. This new iron that they've come out with is going to help his game a lot if he wants to stay just in the Nike family. You know, it's going to be probably November, December. Before anything will be mentioned about the new iron, but trust me, if he has the Pro Combo, he's had him for a while, so the little bit of weight for the new iron is not going to be that bad on him.
And because he's in Australia, his season is just beginning.
It's correct.
It just turned into spring for him, so he's getting excited about spending some money on his clubs.
Yeah, just be patient, and keep an eye on the internet, things about like that as far as launch dates. Nike's website would be a good one to go to keep an eye out for the new products.
Okay. Well, talking about new products and Nike products, how about we give away that Nike Sumo Fairway Wood that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks?
That is going to be a good prize for somebody.
Yeah, and they have choices, don't they?
They do, absolutely.
Like what? What are the choices they get?
Well, as far as loft, they can choose loft, hand, flex.
Lots of options.
They cover everything. So
okay. So we're just saying it's a Nike Sumo Fairway Wood, but you get to be selective if you need a new 5-wood or if you need a 3-wood or a 4-wood, whatever you need. And Kenny will take care of it for you. Kenny, we received over the last 2 weeks a lot of emails from people going, could you please pick my name already? I'm really getting impatient about this. And I'm like, oh, sure, of course. I'll just have Kenny pick your name. And I don't know how we're going to be able to do that, especially because we had 322 entries over the last 2 weeks. And we appreciate all of you sending in and being persistent about this because, you know, it's a hole-in-one for you. If you get picked, who knows it was going to happen until after it did? I mean, I hate hole-in-ones for that. I don't know because I've never had one, but I know that when I get my hole-in-one, it's going to be on a hole where I can't see the cup. And I'll get up to the green going, where's my ball? Oh, you're kidding. Yay, I got a hole-in-one. All right, Kenny, number one to number 322. It's up to you, my friend. I've sorted these alphabetically by first name, and you're going to select number?
Let's just go 15.
And this is in Temecula, California. Can you say that? Temecula?
Temecula, yeah. We ship there a lot, actually.
Well, maybe you're going to be shipping again to Antonio de la Cruz, who's in Temecula, California, and he's a Golf Smarter listener. Congratulations, Antonio. You have won a Nike Sumo Fairway Wood.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
But, Kenny, I'm not done with you because I want more.
You always do.
Hey, it's part of the agreement, isn't it? No, it's not. It's just something I like to hound you about because you've got stuff sitting around the office you're not going to need and you want to promote, and I think we should give away more stuff. What do you want to give away next?
I had a buddy of mine. He's reps for a company, Solus Wedge is what it is, S-O-L-U-S, extremely popular wedge. A lot of guys use it on tour. Nobody gets paid to play it, so that should tell you a lot right there. But the way they have it, it's what they call it as a crescent cut sole contour. So the bottom or the sole of the wedge has a unique shape to it. So it gives you a real different approach to what we call leading edge. We'll review it another day, but it's going to be a good wedge for somebody to win. And whoever does, I'd like to hear from them and see how they like it.
And so did this come in different degrees as well, or is it like one of those universal wedges?
No, they come in different degrees as well.
Okay, and you can either do a sand where it gets a bigger bounce on it or no?
Yeah, it does, but this crescent cut sole contour that they have, you can basically change the amount of bounce that is on the wedge by whether you open it or close it. So it's real unique. You know, we can get it in a gap wedge, sand wedge, or lob wedge, whatever they want to use.
Now, with wedges, you don't necessarily go with graphite a shaft on that. Aren't wedges mostly a metal shaft?
This wedge is steel shaft only, and typically steel what shaft, you find, right, whether it's Cleveland, Callaway, Mizuno, Titleist, most all of those wedges come steel shaft. You can order them in graphite. What you're looking for in a sand wedge is consistency, and steel is more consistent regardless.
And your club head speed on the wedge is not going to be as fast anyway.
Exactly.
It's more about control.
It's not even going to be close.
Yeah. So that's why they're mostly steel shaft. Right?
In my opinion, yeah. They're more consistent. They have lower torque. They're, you know, so you're not generating club head speed like you are with a longer iron or a fairway wood. So if you put a graphite shaft, then it's going to have a little bit softer feel, but for the most part, it's going to be the exact same.
Okay. All right. Well, the Solus Wedge and the value of that, generally, if you want to go out and buy one of those?
Yeah, we sell them for $130, so it's an expensive wedge.
That is an expensive wedge. Wow. So you can buy one from Kenny at edwinwattsgolf.com. And if you do make a purchase, make sure that you click on go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the Edwin Watts Golf banner. That way you'll get instructions on how you can receive 10% off and free shipping. Now, there are restrictions on some manufacturers. Kenny, if they wanted to buy this one, will they be able to get the 10% off?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, fine. So you can get 10% off this and your free shipping. So you'll save some money on this one. So go to, again, golfsmarterpodcast.com. Click on the Edwin Watts Golf banner, and you'll get all the instructions how to get your discount on most of your purchases. There are some restrictions. But if you'd like to win one, while you're at golfsmarterpodcast.com, click on the word contest, and that is right below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. And fill out the shipping information and the verification code, and then click submit. The contest page makes it real easy for you to enter. We do ask that you enter only once per email address over our two-week period. Derek, I'm talking to you now. Derek entered 14 times, so I think he's got something on autopilot that enters every day for him. Cut it out, buddy. You know who I'm talking to.
you know you're guilty out
there.
Yeah,
you do know you're guilty.
And he's laughing right now.
He is laughing. Oh, they're talking about me. I'm going to enter 28 times now. Anyway, we have somebody who's going through and making sure that there's one entry. So when I say there's 322 entries, that doesn't mean Derek's 14 entries as well. There are 322 entries. And we're going to... And to the person who wrote to me saying I'm getting silly, yeah, that's true. All right, your deadline for entry is October 8th, and we'll do the drawing on the program of October 9th. Eddie, I need to go take a nap.
you need a little more coffee, I think.
Yeah, well, come on, you know I don't do caffeine, man. It's redundant for me. It's just not necessary. Talk to you later.
All right, Fred. Take care.
Thank you, Kenny. I got to get that out of me. Thanks again to Michael Hanthony of the Mental Keys to Improve Your Golf. You can find more information at mentalkeys.com. We close this week's show with a quote submitted by Ken Schreck, who sent a long list of great quotes recently. This one is credited to All Us Hackers. I don't know if that's an official group or is just us. And the quote is simply this. If I hit it right, it's a slice. If I hit it left, it's a hook. If I hit it straight, it's a miracle. If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, or you want to just slap my wrist for being silly, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
Here's another radio baseball card.
If you ask me who the greatest baseball player in history of baseball was, I'd say Babe Ruth. I feel like I've been cheated as a baseball player not being able to see Babe Ruth play the game of baseball. I would have loved to play against Babe Ruth, but if I did, I'd probably be dead now, so maybe I shouldn't say that.
That was Pete Rose, the all-time hit leader in Major League Baseball history, and this is your invitation to subscribe to Radio Baseball Cards, hosted by the late Hall of Famer and network announcer Don Drysdale. Radio Baseball Cards is a series of amazing and sometimes amusing stories recorded in 1987 featuring some of the greatest players of the 20th century. Here's rookie Barry Bonds.
Sometimes I'm a boxer out on the baseball field, you know, and sometimes Eddie Murphy, or some days I'm a Clint Eastwood, you know, just really mad.
My first World Series, I was just a young kid in Chicago, and we played probably the greatest team of all time, the 1932 Yankees.
Also, this being the 60th anniversary of the breaking down of baseball's color barrier, we speak to teammates, opponents, and admirers sharing their favorite memories and celebration of Jackie Robinson. Hall of Fame catcher, the late Roy Campanella.
I can't speak for Jackie, but God knows I know he felt this way. It was a challenge to prove that blacks could play on the field and be gentlemen off of the field.
Collect a piece of baseball history that sounds as fresh today as it did 20 years ago. Subscribe to the premium edition podcast of Radio Baseball Cards at iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.